This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello and welcome to The Rest is Money with me, Steph McGovern.
And with me, Robert Peston. So it's worth recapping the astonishing historic events we've been living through. Turmoil in government bond markets, fears that the government would not be able to borrow, quasi-quarting, taking the blame, being summoned back from the IMF and sacked peremptorily by the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister appointing Jeremy Hunt, somebody who would be regarded as a sort of political enemy, as her new Chancellor. And so, you know, huge anxiety over that weekend about whether stability would return, whether we would avoid as a nation being sent to the fiscal knacker's yard.
So what happens next?
So this was almost like no political chaos I've ever seen. I remember talking to Jeremy Hunt shortly after he is appointed Chancellor. I interview him on the Saturday. It's not usual to interview chancellors on Saturdays. And one of the things he mentions, which is hilarious, because of course, he's on the left of the Tory party. He's absolutely the one bit of the Tory party that you would never expect Liz Truss to have to rely on in terms of, you know, bailing her out. And he told me that I think he was on holiday in Italy, and he gets a text from somebody purporting to be from Liz Truss saying,
purporting.
Well, he gets this text and says, this is the Prime Minister, could you please ring me? And he assumes it's a why. He just assumes it's a practical joke.
Would he not have Liz Truss's number in his phone?
I mean, maybe it just shows you the extent to which they've drifted apart as politicians. Anyway, he doesn't know for a fact it's her, but he thinks, oh, well, you know, there must be a chance. So he does get in touch and is told that she, you know, he wants to appoint a chancellor. He then rings around various of his mates to get advice. And I think the main thing he learns is when you're appointed chancellor in these circumstances, you are so powerful. This is like the moment where you have more power than you're ever going to have in your life, because the last thing any prime minister wants in these circumstances is any kind of dispute with your new chancellor. So he can basically do what he wants.
Go for a luxury chair in the office, that kind of vibe.
Well, it's not quite that, but I'll tell you the things he does do, right? So there's a crisis meeting in Chequers. And one of the things he says to a friend of mine is he says, I'm taking this job not to bail out the Tory party. I'm taking this job to bail out Britain, because he recognises quite how much is at stake. And he's taken the job. They have this crunch meeting in Chequers. And he says to the Prime Minister, and as I understand it, she was not terribly happy about this and tried to push back. He said to her, the whole mini budget has to go. And obviously, she knows what a political catastrophe this is for her in terms of her reputation within the Tory party. But she's got no choice, because she knows that if he walks at that point, she's literally, I mean, you might argue the country's toast at that point, but she is definitely toast. And so she concedes. He also asks, I don't know if you will remember, there was a bloke called Rupert Harrison who was the chief economic advisor to George Osborne when he was chancellor, And Hunt rings up Rupert Harrison and says he wants to appoint him to this new role as Minister for Financial Stability with a place in the House of Lords. In fact, Harrison decides against doing that because he wants to be an MP. And in fact, he is a Tory MP candidate. But Harrison instead sets up this sort of new Council of Economic Advisers, brings in these sort of bigwigs and gurus from the city to again be seen to be showing confidence in Hunt. And then on the Monday, Hunt stands up in Parliament and basically, not quite everything in the mini budget, for example, there are certain things to do with stamp duty that roll on, but the big items in the mini budget get reversed, and the energy price guarantee gets scaled back.
Yeah, so it was things like he reinstated the planned rise in corporation tax, didn't he, from 19% to 25%. And as you say, he made this statement on the medium-term fiscal plan, kind of reversing everything, saying that the energy price guarantee would be reviewed in April 2023.
Which is effectively a signal that it's going to be scaled back.
Okay, so all this is happening politically. And where are we now with the deadline, the 14th of October deadline?
Yeah, it's passed. But because of the appointment of Hunt, the total, almost total reversal of the mini budget, a good deal more stability returns. Now, unfortunately, at that point, we are, as a nation, still paying considerably more than we used to be paying relative to other countries to borrow, the so-called risk premium, which is the amount that the UK has to pay compared to other developed nations like Germany and America is still large. So as a result of the trust chaos, not only interest rates for the government, but interest rates for all of us, including mortgage rates, are higher than they would otherwise be. So there is lasting economic damage, but Hunt, through reinstituting a more prudent approach, does bring stability.
And I think it's worth pointing out on this, this became a really scary time for homeowners, which hasn't really eased either because, you know, we suddenly saw loads of lenders pulling products because no one could predict what was going to happen with interest rates. And it was incredible to see all of these different products suddenly gone because no one knew what was going to happen. So you can't forget that, as well as all the political and Bank of England and, you know, all these kind of esoteric financial dramas, real people were shitting themselves too.
I mean, there are some other extraordinary things that happen at this point. So there is a senior civil servant who Liz Truss likes and Kwasi Kwarteng likes, who is the senior civil servant at the Department of Justice, who's called Antonia Romeo. A few days earlier, she was offered the job of permanent secretary at the Treasury to replace Tom Scholar. But although she understands economics, she's not a Treasury lifer. And so there's this astonishing situation, as I understand it. There was even a letter given to her, giving her the job. Simon Case rescinds within 24 hours the offer. Simon Case, who's the cabinet secretary, the senior civil servant, does this astonishing thing because they need to have maximum stability. He rescinds this offer of the top job to Antonia Romeo.
Because of Hunt coming in.
Because it was all part of a package of, you know, Hunt and just a whole package of introducing stability. And instead of which, they appoint this Treasury lifer, a bloke called James Bowler, who sort of started life working for Gordon Brown, who is a much more traditional Treasury appointment to the top job in the Treasury. I mean, in terms of the humiliation of Truss and Kwarteng, what you might call, we talked earlier about the blob, the establishment. This was the revenge of the blob on a scale that you cannot conceive.
The revenge of the blob.
it's amazing.
So in all of this going on politically then, what's actually happening with the LDIs then and, you know, the collapse in that market?
So they have stabilised. The assets have been transferred across. And one of the things we learned, the Bank of England then does liaise with the Central Bank of Ireland and with its colleagues in Luxembourg. And a lot more security is finally built into these LDIs. They've now got enough collateral, enough assets to withstand pretty dramatic, if there were to be future bond market shocks, say 2 or 3 percentage point rises in gilt yields, what's known as 2 to 3% is 200 to 300 basis points in the jargon, most of them would be okay. So they are more stable. I have to say, and we may come on to this after the break, it's not clear that the lessons have at that point, being appropriately learned, however, by the Bank of England.
And that probably is a good point to have a break, after which we will talk about Liz Truss's exit.
Spoiler alert!
And yeah, round all of this up as well. We'll see you in a moment.
Bye-bye.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to The Rest Is Money with me, Steph McGovern.
And with me, Robert Paston.
Right, so the day Liz Truss resigns, tell me about it, Robert.
One of the things that is so extraordinary is that the Bank of England stops buying bonds on the 14th of October, and 6 days later, the 20th of October, Liz Truss resigns. Now, her fate was sealed, frankly, the moment that she sacked Kwasi Kwarteng. It's almost impossible, if you just look through history, for any prime minister to survive the sacking of a chancellor in those sorts of circumstances. I mean, you know, many would argue that even an incredibly long-lived and successful, you know, in her terms, prime minister like Margaret Thatcher was ultimately brought down because of her conflict with her then chancellor, Nigel Lawson, you know, and the way that he resigned. So literally, we were counting the days after the appointment of Hunt, after the reversal of the mini budget, for Truss to resign. We knew it was coming. What we didn't quite know was whether there would be a coup by her MPs. In fact, she went before the formal coup, but she was a realist. You know, it was clear to her that her authority had been so damaged that she simply had to go. And so, you know, there I was again, you know, for ITV, standing outside Downing Street, waiting for the statement. And twice that year, we'd had that momentous event. We'd had it earlier with Boris Johnson. These are normally things you have to wait years for. Amazing. But it seems to me what we now need to look at are two things, really. The financial lessons and the political lessons, and they are both so important. One of the things I am staggered by, genuinely staggered by, is why the Bank of England hasn't come in for more criticism. Because let's be absolutely clear, it should have seen the LDI crisis coming. It should have tried to protect us. It didn't. It didn't understand the scale of the LDI problem until it was upon us. And I am genuinely staggered there has not been a proper external review of why it got it wrong. You would expect, for example, MPs on the Treasury Select Committee to really look at this in detail. They did carry out an initial look at it. But have we had the Bank of England held to account the way that it should have been? No, I don't think we have. There is a big internal review going on at the moment at the Bank of England. But let's again be clear, no senior official there has personally taken responsibility for the failures. No heads have rolled. Truss and Kwarteng went. And everybody would, I think most people would say that was right because they made all sorts of reckless decisions. You know, there were named individuals at the Bank of England who should at least have stood up in public and explained slightly more about what they personally did wrong, even if it wasn't of the view that they've got to necessarily resign. But I don't think, you know, this is a hugely powerful institution. It's central to the way we manage things. You don't elect members of the the Bank of England, which means that they have to be held to account properly by MPs, and that's not happened.
And my worry with all of this is, even if they now are totally across the LDR market, it'll be the next one. That'll be the problem. There'll be another, you know, like I mentioned, CDOs with subprime or whatever. It'll be just, oh, there's the PPI scandal or whatever it is. It'll be some other product or fund or whatever that will be created and that will be behind the curve on it, and the government and the Bank of England won't be across it enough, and then it'll be another disaster.
But that's what the Treasury Select Committee should have looked at. They should have actually looked at the whole functioning of the Prudential Regulation Authority, the Financial Policy Committee, and everything operating in that area in the wake of what was the most significant financial crisis since at least 2007-08, and in terms of the ability of the government to fund itself, the most significant crisis since the UK went cap in hand to the IMF in the late 70s, right? This was a moment of national humiliation, and I do not understand why there has not been more of a formal investigation into what went wrong and why. And there's another really important point here, which is, even if you don't believe, and some people do believe, let's be clear, that Andrew Bailey and the Bank of England engineered things to get rid of Kwarteng and Truss. And I think actually Liz Truss herself believes that the Bank of England overstepped in terms of its involvement in politics. But even if you don't believe that there was an actual conspiracy, the Bank of England's behaviour undoubtedly contributed to the fall of a Prime Minister and a Chancellor. Okay. And even if you put it down to the incompetence of their stewardship of financial stability, even if you put it down to simply the fact they didn't see the LDI crisis coming, the Bank of England should not be determining political outcomes in that way. That is not healthy for a functioning democracy. Mm. And so I feel really uncomfortable about what happened. And I don't think, again, the lessons are being learned and properly debated.
So we are going to hear a lot from Liz Truss over the next few weeks, months, aren't we? Because obviously her book's coming out and she'll be very much on the publicity circuit. And as you've just said, you know, she believes there was an establishment conspiracy to bring her down because officials thought her plans to restore growth were too dangerous. We're going to hear her say that again. I mean, is anyone going to believe her then now, having heard our amazing three-part series on this?
I think what people will, rational people will say, is even if you do believe in the so-called deep state, which is this American concept that there are these very powerful figures in government who are always there, normally refers to the security services, but it can also, you know, refer to permanent officials. They're just powerful individuals behind the scenes who try and maintain the status quo. And she appears to have bought into the deep state conspiracy theory, which is that people like her who want to be radical are always prevented by these mysterious, powerful people. I think if you listen to the story we've just told, what you would conclude is that the problem with the deep state is not that, you know, it is this sinister, powerful force. It's just that it's blooming incompetent. Because it seems to me the story here is that this government was brought down by cock-up, right? Cock-up on a colossal scale. I think it is probably the case that if the Bank of England had properly known about the LDI risk, and if they had properly communicated that to the Treasury, and if the Treasury had said to Kwasi Kwarteng, if you go ahead with the mini budget, you will not be able to borrow in the markets, I think at that point, maybe even Kwasi Kwarteng and Liz Truss would have said, oh, maybe we need to just take a deep breath and think about these plans. Now, I'm not certain they would have actually believed the Bank of England and the Treasury, because they were so sceptical of the so-called blob. They might just simply have said, no, you're just trying to scare us.
I think the latter, definitely, so they from might what have you've done. Said.
But in a well-functioning democracy, it is still the case that that message should have been delivered, and it wasn't. Right? So I would basically say there was incompetence all round. There was incompetence in the Bank of England, there was incompetence in the Treasury, and there was definitely incompetence when it came to the decisions made by Truss and Kwarteng.
Which, I have to say, is the most depressing thing ever, isn't it? To think that all of these people in the most powerful jobs who are in charge of the country's prosperity we're incompetent is a joke.
It's worrying. And it matters, right? It matters to how the rest of the world sees us, and it matters to our own confidence. And it also sort of matters now. Because to be absolutely clear, we have a Labour Party that is, you would say in a sort of economic reform sense, terrified of its own shadow. You know, any suggestion that the Labour Party might borrow some additional money to fund growth, the Labour Party runs away and tries to, you know, damp down immediately, which some would say is holding back the growth prospects of the UK. So there's the long shadow of this crisis doesn't just apply to the current government, but it also applies to whoever replaces this government. That is a tragedy.
Yeah. So we lose the Prime Minister and the Chancellor. Things kind of calm down in a sense in terms of the bond market, and the Bank of England get off scot-free.
I mean, it's not the end. I mean, we've just done a series and we hope that, in a sense, questions will be asked. There is this review going on, carried out by the former head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke. We haven't got his results of that. I suspect that will force reform at the Bank of England. Whether it's sufficient reform, we don't know. But yes, you're right. I do think the Bank of England should have faced more public criticism for its failures in the worst fiscal crisis since at least the 1970s.
Well, there you have it.
So thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be back with slightly more conventional episodes later this week.
Yeah, we'll see you then. And just a reminder, if you do want to get in touch with us, you can email us restismoney@gmail.com. Maybe there's something else you want us to look into, do a deep dive on. Or you can go through our socials, just search for The Rest Is Money and you will find us. Right, that's it from us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.